Tonight on our special weekend kid-friendly edition of Real Ghost Stories Online, what do you do when voices and visions haunt you night after night alone in your bedroom? That's what Harper and me talk about today on Real Ghost Stories Online.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
That it is. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. Write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. And of course, support the program by becoming an extra podcast person, an EPP as we call them. When you do that, you get a whole bunch of extras. You get our audiobook, our ebook, both Amazon bestsellers. You also get hooked up with a bonus episode every single week exclusively for EPP members and access to our archive of those episodes, more than 300 just waiting for you to binge away on. As an added bonus, I've thrown in there advanced episodes of the show. You get them as we make them, so weeks before they're released to the public, and there's no commercials on them either. So you can just make that your source for listening to the show. When you become an EPP, get all the advanced episodes, get the EPP episodes all in one place, and no ads. It's all there. $5 a month. That's what keeps us on the air. Check it out, ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Tony and Harper joining you on today's episode. How are you this fine day?
I'm doing great. I've been looking forward for this day.
I know you have. I'm not joking. Every single day of the week here, because we record this on Tuesday, but if it's not a Tuesday, there's about 7 times during each day of the week where you come up to me going, I can't wait for Tuesday.
And what can I say? I love doing it.
And that's awesome. I love that you get as much joy out of this as I did at your age, except I was just talking into a boombox and playing it back for my cat. So a little bit different. You have a little wider audience than I did, a little bit different demographic. I was really doing well with the feline. You are doing well with the humans that are listening to our program. So, so that's exciting. Over the weekend, we had a chance to go around to some antique places that were practicing social distancing quite well because we were the only ones in the store, which was great. I guess probably not great for business, but it was one of the few times in recent memory I felt safe to be out doing a few things that were semi-normal, still not quite anywhere near normal. But we were masked up and we just kind of walked around, didn't touch anything and looked at things. And I had asked you, you know, if you were feeling anything.
Yeah, you pretty much used me as a ghost detector.
I really did. Because we went to this one that we know is haunted, that we love. And the owners tell us their ghost stories there. We went up to the area. There's like a second floor, like a balcony. It's an old mercantile building. And we went up to the second floor, which is kind of a balcony, and we walked around. And I said to Harper, I said, "Okay, I know you're more sensitive than I am to these things. So if you feel anything, let me know or tell me what you feel." And Harper said,
"Nothing, absolutely nothing." And that's me.
And you know what? And I love that. I love that because that means she's being honest. That means she's not like, "Oh, okay, now I'm going to suddenly feel a ghost here." She got nothing. And that's great. So, I mean, I'm waiting for the day we're out somewhere where you have something, but I respected the honesty very much that you were just like, "I got nothing, Dad." Like, okay, well, let's move on. 855-853-4802 is our phone number at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. We would love to hear them. Let's go to our first letter. It says, "I've always been interested in the paranormal, and I find the subject extremely fascinating. It's a subject I approach with huge amounts of respect, but I have not personally had much experience with it in my life. Just a couple of possible UFO sightings that were hard to explain. Even though they were memorable experiences, they were way off in the distance, so it was really nothing to write home about. But I did have one experience, which was quite hard to forget. It was a series of events that happened at a place we used to live in Germany. I was incredibly young when it happened, but I can still see the visuals like it was yesterday. In the mid-1970s, I was around 5 years old. My family and I lived in the U.S. on an army base in Germany, or lived on a U.S. army base in Germany. As a little bit of added history, this base was used during World War II by the German army. During that time, they kept Polish and Russian prisoners here to work in the town and farms to replace the Germans who were drafted away to war, calling it the Displaced Persons Camp. From what I gather, the U.S. took the base over as they advanced through during the war. They officially turned it into a U.S. Army base in 1951, Camp Wilsden. Our home on the base was an apartment building that had a few units per building with a spiral staircase hallway connecting the top and bottom floors. While I was there, we were having unusual family experiences, fond memories of the snow, neighbor's dog, and all the camping trips that we took. However, I also remember the most vivid dreams that I can still recall to this day. These dreams do not fall into the category of fond memories. In truth, they frighten me to my core. In the house, we had one of those vintage Sacred Heart tapestry rugs of Jesus hanging on the wall, because that's what you did in the 70s, hung rugs on the wall. I remember Jesus's fingers being eerily thin and long, and the border was lined with a row of ivy and grape leaves. And to be honest, that thing always just gave me the creeps. It hung just above the couch in the living room. One evening, I fell asleep on the couch. In my dream, I woke up horrified by what I saw. I fell to the floor and scooted back as far as I could at the sight of these leaves individually marching off the picture, single file, down into the couch and then to the floor and into the hallway. I could hear them marching as I remember a menacing yet magical feeling as if they knew I was there. It scared the hell out of me. And after that, all I can remember is running past them as I bolted into my parents' room. One of the other dreams I had, I remember being frozen with fear as my bedroom wall right next to my bed was covered with slithering, hissing black snakes. And not like the innocent little garter snakes either. These were big, black, scaly serpent snakes. I remember them creepily moving upwards to the left in, and it looked like they were in a hurry. Again, it felt like they were aware of my presence, but they never crawled off the wall or onto me. However, I remember feeling helpless because I tried to call out to my parents, but my voice would not work at all. I think that was the most frightening part. Eventually, I was able to yell out for them, and my dad came to try and make them disappear, but that is all I remember. Another dream I had was about, it was also in my bedroom, but there was no snakes. This time, it was late at night after everyone had gone to bed. All the lights were out, and I remember a voice calling my name while I was sleeping. I woke up not knowing where the voice was coming from. So I turned around, sat up at the foot of my bed, only to see it coming from a little rubber toy I had often played with. It was weird enough in its own right, but stranger still, it was hanging on the cross I had above my headboard. It was one of those bendy toys that had the wire inside so you can bend the arms and legs. It was not a menacing toy by any means, but in fact, it was talking to me. It almost seemed to glow while doing so. I don't really remember what it said, but I remember hearing my name, and I do not recall being afraid of the voice at the time. It seems like it was giving me advice or instructions, but again, I do not recall a single word of it. The last dream I had during this time was of me flying down the spiral staircase into the neighbor's apartment. As I was floating along with my arms spread out like a bird, I remember seeing daylight in the staircase while I was there. For some reason, that just sticks with me. This dream was very lucid as well, as I knew I was dreaming and I could not control my flight. I remember seeing my neighbors in their house, and I remember them noticing me. Then again, it might not have been the neighbors that noticed me. It might have been another presence there with them. I had that experience only a few more times in my childhood, but it went away when I got older. It reminded me of the out-of-body experience the kid had in the movie Insidious. It always was something in my life that I never had answers to. I couldn't understand why I remembered those dreams so vividly. What did they mean? Why did I remember those dreams more vividly than all the other dreams I had in my life? It was years later that I finally had the revelation as to why they were so memorable. When I was around 20 years old, I mentioned them to my mother while I was visiting her in hopes that she could shed some light on them. She patiently heard everything I had to say and then replied, "Chris, those weren't dreams." She then explained to me that for 3 days, I had terrible hallucinations that not only scared me, but scared the hell out of them as well. My dad used to take care of my imaginary snakes. It was so bad they eventually took me to the doctor to look for answers. The doctors were convinced I had gotten into some cleaning supplies under the kitchen sink. When they ran tests, nothing came up. They ended up diagnosing me with delirium tremens, which is something that severe alcoholics experience during detox. I can say with certainty, at 5 years old, I was not an alcoholic. After hearing all this from my mother, it definitely sent a cold chill down my spine. It definitely answered why it was so memorable. However, the question of what it all meant and why all this happened to me has yet to be answered. It's something I have never, ever forgotten.
So, basically what I'm hearing is that, the snakes weren't real?
They weren't real. They were hallucinating them. They were having dreams about these things, but also at the same time, throughout the day, seeing some of the scary things that they were dreaming about. But only this person was, not the mom or the dad. Only the child was seeing these images. And they did their due diligence, which you should do. If a person is starting to see things that are not there, that others are not seeing, and there's really not many other signs of anything paranormal going on, yeah, the first thing you want to do is go to the doctor. You want to make sure that you're not poisoned or you're not, there's some sort of thing that's in your body or there's something going wrong with your mind, which can cause things like that to happen that have nothing to do with ghosts. That does happen and should always be examined first and foremost. But after doing so, doctor gave a diagnosis, but the diagnosis, you have to understand, was not based on any sort of medical findings that were chemical or anything like that. It was just based on what they were told. How someone would have that state, that delirium state, without being induced into it for some way, shape, or form doesn't make any sense. And that's what makes it a little bit paranormal. They didn't have like this psychotic break or something, and then they stayed that way. They seemed to snap back. And it doesn't seem to even be a psychotic break. It almost just seems to be like they were seeing some things and experiencing things that were not necessarily triggered by anything. Meaning there was no traumatic event right before it. Sometimes when people go through a trauma, whether it be a car accident, a loss of someone, something horrible happening to them, it can trigger things like that. It can trigger hallucinations. It can trigger things that are not paranormal, but your mind trying to cope and firing different ways, things like that can happen.
But it didn't really say that anything bad had happened before that.
Exactly.
So
that's what leads this person to believe maybe, in fact, this was something paranormal. Because the logical explanations aren't there. Have you ever had a dream that seems super real? Have you ever seen, before we can go to dreams, have you ever seen anything that others did not see, that you realize later maybe wasn't there? If the answer is no, that's fine.
No.
No, that's good. You know, I had an experience once where I guess it would be based on trauma, but the trauma was me watching Michael Jackson's Thriller video far too many times in a row. At about your age.
That's not really that bad.
Well,
I would probably do the exact same thing.
Well, that's the thing. And this is before there was cable. This was before there was internet. This was, if you wanted zombies, you know, you either had to find a zombie show on television or, you know, which was few and far between, if ever, or you would have to go to the video store and rent something. And I remember I would constantly see the Michael Jackson Thriller video at the video store so you could rent it, okay? And I always, and it was like a 13, 14 minute video. And I always would beg my mom, can I rent that? Can I rent that? Eventually, she gave in. I said, fine, you can rent it. And my parents kind of had the approach with some things in life of, let him figure it out on his own. If he's not going to listen to us, let him figure it out that this is a bad idea. They did it with Halloween candy, where I ate so much Halloween candy, I threw up. I didn't do. Well, I did do that again, like for three more Halloweens in a row. But I eventually learned. I did eventually learn. But they did that with the Thriller video. I'm like, fine, get it. But they didn't let me watch like R movies or anything like that. They're very, you know, responsible on that end. But with this one, I was like, okay, fine. It's spooky. You like spooky. Let's see if he can handle it. So I sat there and I watched it over and over and over. And I just, I would press pause at some of the zombies. Like, oh, it's so neat how the makeup is done and all that. And one that while I was renting it, it was time to go to bed one night. And we were out on the porch, me and my mom and my dad. And it was nighttime and we were just sitting out there talking, just enjoying the evening. Okay, Tony, time to go to bed. Okay. So I go in the house and my parents have a bi-level home. And my bedroom's on the very top of floor of this bi-level. So there's a big stairway that goes up from the living room to the two rooms that are on the top floor. And me standing at the bottom of that staircase, I looked up and I swear to God, and this is not paranormal. This is an effect of
hallucination.
Yes, hallucination or trauma, because I scared myself so much with that music video throughout the day. That I was now looking up, and I swear to God, I can still picture it in my mind of what I was seeing. I swear to God, there was the Michael Jackson zombie character with the red jacket and all standing up there in front of my door, like blocking the way in with his arms at his side. And then there was two other zombies blocking the bathroom door and my parents' door. Those are the three rooms that are up there, and you can see them from the stairway. And I'm at the bottom of the stairs and freaking out, seeing this, going, oh my God. And I go back and I tell my parents, like, Tony, there's nothing there. And they're very persistent, and they made me go up eventually and go to bed. They didn't go up with me. They didn't, see, there's nothing here. I went up, and they're right. Once I got up there, I did not see them. But that is an example of the effect that, as light of a trauma as that was compared to what many people have gone through in their life, that is an example of how your mind can work. And you can hallucinate things sometimes, and it has nothing to do with your house being haunted or paranormal. Yeah.
The house that you were in at that time, is that the house that I visited?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So it's that exact area, room, staircase. And I don't think that house is haunted at all. I've never had anything paranormal happen to me there.
What about the ghost cat?
You're right.
So, yeah.
So maybe there is. But at the worst, there's a ghost cat. But I've never experienced anything that was, I would say, was human or dark or menacing or anything like that. Yeah.
It's just a friendly ghost cat.
You can't go wrong with a ghost cat. She was a very friendly cat in life, and she still just wants to curl up on the bed and do the kneading of her paws every night to this day, maybe. I don't know. I've not slept. Yeah. I have not slept in that room for years since you were born, because that's where you sleep now. That was my old bedroom. And I don't feel it downstairs when I sleep in that room. But I wonder if you ever feel it up there. And you could almost write it off as, well, when they had a cat, there's no cat there now. So I don't know.
You know, I think I actually had one experience with that cat.
When it was alive?
Not Scruff, the one before.
Oh, you felt the kneading of the mashed potatoes in the bed.
Yeah, because when I was in the room alone, I was just laying in the bed and Livy was up using the bathroom and I thought, So I was alone in the room, and then I just felt this thing just like jump up onto my foot.
Yeah, that's what it feels like. It was probably the ghost cat. So they have a ghost cat. There could be far worse things. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. The Real Ghost Stories Online, to share your real ghost stories with us. Next story, it says, I've wanted to write in, but I am still terrified over what I'm about to tell you. 2 years ago, I moved into a big, updated 4-bedroom house with my sister. We were both single mothers, and it seemed to make sense. She has 4 children, and my daughter was 8 months old currently. We had a couple of weeks to move, or both of us would have to sign a new lease at our current places. So when we found this house for a reasonable price, it was perfect. Initially, touring the house, it seemed dark, despite the number of windows it had, but we were on a time crunch, and though neither of us really wanted to move into it, we signed a lease and moved in a few days later. the morning after we moved in, I was unpacking and putting up beds into my boy's room. My eight-month-old daughter was swinging in her baby swing in the living room that I had to pass through to get to the boy's room. Out of a quick glance to the baby, I saw a boy standing beside her, around the same age as my sister's youngest son. I thought it was him until I realized he had lines going through him like TV static, and it was not him at all. I ran back to the living room to the baby, and he was gone. I thought it was insane, despite my many experiences with the paranormal being real. I never spoke of this to anyone. A couple of days went by, and my niece, 7 at the time, came running from her room, whispering, "There's a little boy sitting on her bed, and he's sad," describing the same little boy I saw. I did not confirm I had seen him too. I wanted to ignore him so he would leave. After a couple of weeks of moving in, things started to escalate, especially around the baby and me. It was centered around us. It was the middle of the night. My daughter's balls from her ball pit would be played with. Cups would be knocked onto the floor. Toys would go off. All the floor was tile, so the sounds were easily heard. We shut and locked our bedroom doors at night, hoping to keep whatever was out there out of our rooms. However, referring to this thing as he, assuming it was just a little boy. Tickle our door handles, knock on our doors in the middle of the night, and it escalated to the middle of the day soon after. My daughter's bed started randomly creaking like a heavier child was laying down to the mattress, and I moved her into the bed with me. Whatever it was, always tried to be around her. We were reading up on the issue. Neither of us moms had slept more than a few hours because it was constantly going on. And the day, the night did not matter. And decide to sage the house and everyone before they entered back in, it did not help. It made it worse. Slamming doors, things were thrown. But the worst thing it did was come into my bed next to my daughter. It sounded like white noise, like popping, crackling TV static. It felt as if an overwhelming presence was there. It indented the bed. The sound got closer and closer. I started yelling a protection prayer, screaming at this thing to leave my child alone, and frantically started calling my ex to come to stay the night. The next day, we called a priest, an old Hispanic priest from Mexico that lived the Catholic way his whole life, who was willing to help. He went room to room blessing the house and told the translator that the presence is the strongest in my daughter's crib. That's where it's trying to stay. He said for us to imagine and believe that we are grabbing the spirit and to physically throw it out the door. We did. And things were okay for a night, just the toys being thrown around. The next night, of no activity in the day, the doorbell rang a few times, so we opened the door, but nobody was there. Unknowingly, we let back in whatever we threw out, and it all started back up. My sister and I began arguing a lot, and she decided to drive from Texas to California on a whim, leaving me in the house alone for a week. The activity did not stop. It was day and night every single day. I said protection prayers. We wore blessed religious jewelry day and night. The younger kids were confessing that they were having nightmares of a baby being drowned in a bathtub by a man, and I was having nightmares of her being taken by an invisible force into the ceiling fan in my old house with very high ceilings, but I always caught her before she hit it. Day 3 of us being alone, a faint phantom music box type music began playing on an infinite loop, day and night, getting stronger at night. I'm telling y'all, I did not sleep that week. I was petrified. The music did not stop when everyone came back. It was constant. I still have audio recordings of it, but too afraid to listen to them again. When she came back, the arguing did not stop. She was affected emotionally by whatever the dark was in the house and told my daughter and me to get out during an argument. And I did not hesitate. I left that night and activity got worse for them at that house, to the point of her daughter seeing shadow men, them all being forced to sleep in one room or in the car. They left and broke the lease. Now we're fine. Still to this day, I do not allow any movies or TV shows or audio to be allowed inside my house. I'll not even speak of this experience inside or around my home. My daughter is now 3, and there are no signs of anything attaching itself to her, thank goodness. Anyway, I know this was long. I love the show. And I listen to it while I'm at work. Sorry, but I cannot listen to this podcast while at my home.
Okay. That's scary.
You think? You know, it's one of those stories where it starts out kind of innocent, kind of like, oh, it's just a child. And this is a good example, because I don't know that you've had a story like this on the show where you've been on, where it starts out innocent. It starts out like, oh.
It's just a child.
Yeah.
No, it's this person dragging my daughter up to a fan.
Yeah, and then it escalates, and the imagery and the torment escalates. And a lot of this is torment. I mean, the daughter being dragged up to the fan was an image in a dream that she saw. So that didn't really physically happen, but she dreamed it. And the kids are having these horrible nightmares of the daughter drowning. That's not a nice, innocent little boy presence. If it is, it's a sadistic, horrible child ghost. But I, and not to say that that's not a possibility, because almost everything is a possibility here. But it's likely not a little child ghost. It's something much darker that's taking the image or the form of a child to gain trust. And quite often, if you gain trust and then you start interacting with what you think is a child, it almost gives it permission, or whatever rules that these things engage on are very much controlled by the people. The more you interact, the more permission, in a sense, it thinks it then has to do whatever it wants to do. If that involves looking like a child, if that involves knocking on the doors, if that involves giving your children nightmares of your daughter drowning, it just keeps pushing the envelope until it's stopped or you are driven away. Yeah.
This is a child that is a demon.
Well, I don't know that it's really a child. I don't know if it's a demon either, but the power that it has to look like a child leads me down that road a little bit more. I think ghosts that are ghosts of people have certain abilities, and I think ghosts that were not people that are demonic or angelic have certain abilities too. That's just my, after listening to thousands of stories, kind of how I branch out the ghost family tree. And I don't necessarily think that the ghost of you or me, if I were to be a ghost and you're an adult and I'm showing up to you, that I would have the ability to show up as a ghost of a little kid.
No.
I think I'd be showing up as me.
Yeah, and I would just be like, hi.
Yeah. Hey, Dad, let's do a podcast. but if I were an entity, a spirit of some sort that was not originally a little child, if it is something dark and demonic and that gets thrown around far too much, or angelic or whatever, something that didn't walk the earth, some sort of force that's there for negative. I think those are the things that have more power to appear as they want. If this thing wanted to appear like, you know, Chuckles the Clown, it could do that too.
That would terrify me.
It could do whatever it wants, essentially, but it has a strategy, and the strategy is gaining trust. And it does that by looking like a child, and oh, it's this little boy. And then slowly things escalated into the hell that this family then experienced. So that's something to always be aware of. That's when you get... I'm always so hesitant when we get ghost stories in here and the story is really just kind of that first snippet, but in greater detail of, well, it just seems to be a little boy and it's been going on for about a week and they're documenting and they're writing in all the stuff that happened in a week. And it's a really interesting story, but all they know is 1 week's worth of stuff. What do you think it is? And my answer, if it's only been going on for like a week, or even a month sometimes, is I don't know. I don't know if that's just a little boy that seems to be, or a little girl that seems to be very innocent and you seem to be helping it. You got to give it, some of this you just have to give some time to really know what it is you're dealing with. If you're saying this has been going on for 10 years and it's just a little boy and sometimes he's playing jacks out front on the porch, it's probably just a little boy ghost playing jacks out front on the porch. If it's a couple months in and you're kids are having dreams of their siblings drowning and you're having nightmares of it being sucked into a fan and you're being tormented by creepy music that's not there and knocks and this and that, that's not a little boy playing jacks. That's something much more powerful that has a single goal of tormenting you and making your life miserable. Yeah.
I'm glad that they moved.
Yeah, I think that was really obviously the best choice for them, but probably almost the only choice. Because I don't know that this was going to be stoppable. I think in some cases you have haunted houses or haunted situations and places or things that no matter how much you try and exercise that out with the priest or whatever, you ain't going to win.
Is this neighborhood the Lost Homes?
The Lost Homes.
Oh, the Lost Homes.
What are the Lost Homes?
The Lost Homes neighborhood. You don't remember it?
Is that from the book you're reading right now?
No. It's from that other demon story.
Oh, yeah. A couple of weeks ago, there was a neighborhood that was literally called the Lost Homes. Yeah, you're right. And we were talking about, like, what a horrible name for the neighborhood that is. You'll learn. You'll have to remind Daddy sometimes about what we've talked about because I don't remember much. Because the stories all just blend together. I'll start thinking I'm referencing a ghost story, and I'll be thinking about the Goosebumps book that I read to you every night at bedtime. Like, I heard a story like that. That was Goosebumps, you know. But, yeah, you're right. The Lost Homes from a couple weeks ago. What a name for a neighborhood. You wonder about it. We were over the weekend, like I said, we had gone into that antique place, but we also did a lot of outdoor trekking around and just walking around some of our local communities and got some really interesting photos and creepy photos. Nothing, I didn't get anything ghostly. But we walked through a battlefield over the weekend.
And oh, yeah, I remember that. That was fun.
Took a bunch of creepy pictures and we walked through another town. And there's a town close by. And some of our audience would recognize this, probably not the kids, because I'm assuming most of you and the other kids are not really up on Stephen King novels. Stephen King is an author. He's like the grown-up R.L. Stein. You know, R.L. Stein writes Goosebumps. Stephen King writes adult scary stories. And he has kind of this universe that he's built around all of his books and almost kind of take place in a similar area, if you will. And sometimes you'll see things interchange in books. And his towns always have such ominous names to them. And one of the towns that we walked through, which is a beautiful little town if you ever get there, it's great for just walking around outside and exploring. And they have great little shops too, once that, you know, kind of comes back into being safe. It's called Salem Springs.
Oh, yeah, I remember. That was really fun.
And to me, that town, it just sounds like a Stephen King town, like Salem Springs. Like, I don't know what the word Salem even means. I should look that up here. Let me look up what the word Salem means. Maybe it's something positive, or maybe it's someone's name. I don't know.
Maybe it's a demon.
Wouldn't that be great? Is an ancient site in Jerusalem, located in East Jerusalem of an old city. So Salem was originally a city in the Middle East. That's interesting. And then, so they named it, and the springs part was the, there was a spring there. That's what we saw. It was kind of dried up, but, to me, it just has that kind of ominous tone to it, but not that feeling at all when walking around. It's a beautiful little city. I wouldn't say creepy, honestly. You think, oh, Tony thinks it's creepy. There's older elements to it that I guess feel creepy to me, but it's so well kept and they do a great job there. So a neat place if you're ever in Arkansas. It's near the Oklahoma border if you ever want to see it. Yeah.
Was it just me or was there like more than like a welcoming tone when we were in there?
Yeah, I mean, it was warm. It was friendly. People were nice. I mean, we didn't see many people. We were kind of on our own walking around, but it felt comfortable. I felt very much at home. I didn't feel like I was, in some foreign city that I really wasn't welcome to wander around in.
Yeah, and over by the springs, that was. I remember that path that we found?
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of interesting.
Yeah, there was a creepy old path that went up an old spring, which, yeah, water right there. That usually leads to ghost stories. I'd be interested, and I should put it out there, and I should ask for local ghost stories on those towns, because I would love to learn about that, and including some of these that we have right here in our own neck of the woods. There's a lot that we will be able to learn in the coming years, my friend, and do some research on. Maybe we could even get a... We remember when we did the ghost show, we did an episode of Real Ghost Story or the Grave Talks on Mackinac Island.
Oh, yeah.
And we did a walking tour.
Yeah.
Around there. I wonder if there's anyone in any of these towns around here. that could do a similar thing for us. And we could take the recorder and walk along and at a distance do a ghost show of hearing the story and then air that. And that was a fun episode. It was really unique. What I loved most about that, which you can hear back on the other show, The Grave Talks, is you could hear the trotting of the horses on the concrete in the back as we walked and talked.
I don't think I saw any horses as we were doing that.
Well, you know, on Mackinac Island.
I know, but I didn't see any horses.
We did. There was horses.
Well, I just don't vividly remember it.
There was no ghost horses, if that's where you were going with it. I did. There was plenty of horses walking around. You can't get on Mackinac Island without hearing horses or seeing horses. But I think that'd be interesting to do and maybe learn some of that that history. Yes.
Before we get on into the next story, I think next time that we do that, I will be on Spirit.
You want to walk around? You want to do the tour on a horse?
Yes.
I don't think that's going to be part of how it works. But maybe someday. Maybe someday.
Someday.
It's my daughter, everyone. Is anyone surprised she breaks into song? That's going to wrap up today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like the show, keep the show on the air. Become an extra podcast person. EPP at ghostpodcast.com or patreon.com/realghoststories. Until next time, for Harper and all of us at Real Ghost Stories Online, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.